Hey everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for listening to this brand spanking new episode of the Corner Office Podcast. This time, I am talking to the CEO of a company you might not be too familiar with unless you happen to be following the news around trade disputes with China and all of that. It is a pretty sure thing, though, especially if you're listening to this podcast on your mobile device, that you're using one of their products at this very minute. Stephen Mollenkopf is the CEO of Qualcomm, generally speaking, a company that makes chips, but also, more specifically, a company that's making some huge bets on what the technology of the future, we're talking 10 or more years out, is going to be, and then trying to get to that technology first.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to see you.
Do me a favor, and for those out there who aren't entirely sure what Qualcomm is or does, give us like the 30-second version.
30 seconds. We're the company that invents the technology that is used to create cellular. So we are one of the few companies that creates the key things that make the cellular industry happen.
So a lot of people will hear that and think, chips. They make chips. What's the big deal?
We do make chips. We also do the fundamental research that allows the ecosystem to develop. So you try to figure out who does all the work that allows you to make a phone call anywhere in the world to anywhere else in the world. And why does it work everywhere in the world?
Right.
And it's because a small number of companies got together and figured out the standards of being able to do that. And Qualcomm's been a big piece of that for 30 years.
Seems to me that that requires a certain amount of vision, I guess, thinking that one day people would want to pick up this thing in their pocket and call somebody else somewhere else on this planet. You got to think ahead. And yet, certainly nowadays, you're in an environment where things change, first of all, by the day, but possibly by the hour.
It's true. So what we try to do is invent the technology that businesses will need, let's say, a decade from now. So part of that is you have to have a sense for how people are going to use the technology. But a lot of it is, what are the fundamental things that we know people are going to need if they're going to be connected everywhere in the world securely? And then we base the business off of that. And then that's really the investment guidance. That's how you kind of figure out what you're going to invest in. The week to week, the day to day, the hour to hour is really about how do we deliver on the financials that take advantage of the bets that, let's say, we made 5 years ago or 8 years ago. So you have to kind of balance both of those things when you're running the business.
You are an electrical engineer by training, right?
I am.
Been at this company basically your whole working life?
Just about 24 years.
Yeah. What does an electrical engineer know about running a global telecommunications company? And I ask that with the greatest respect.
Yeah, well, I think most of what we do, if you look at the majority of the people that we have on staff, they tend to be engineers.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is what is the right thing to be working on? But I'll tell you, engineering, meaning what is it that we have to invest in? What are the big things we have to get right to make sure that the technology that we work on is relevant? That's really the key thing. Now, that's why you tend to see in tech companies engineering people or people that tend to understand what it takes to make engineering or what is the key technology aspects.
This is so interesting. And maybe this is an obvious follow-up to what you just said, but it occurs to me your job is actually not to make the financials work. Your job is not to make the coding or the chips actually work. Your job is to sit in your office and do whatever it is you do and figure out where this company needs to be in 10 or 15 years.
Well, it's both. I mean, you don't get the ability to do the first one if you don't do the second one. But I think you have to do both. And but you know, if you look at Qualcomm, we make a lot of big bets. Today we're betting on 5G. And what you have to do is you have to have a sense for what technology is going to be important, and you have to make sure you know how to get there.
Okay. So since you're making these big bets, and I want to get back to where I was a little earlier and see if I can come at that question sideways. You're making literally bet the company bets, right, on what's going to happen in 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And yet now you are in a geopolitical environment where you don't know if we're having a trade war with China or not. You don't know what telecommunications policy is going to be. You don't know whether the president of the United States is going to help a Chinese telecommunications manufacturer to save Chinese jobs with ZTE, which we'll get to. How do you keep your head on straight?
Well, the balancing factor is if you have knowledge that the technology that you're working on is going to be relevant, regardless of how those near-term decisions, political decisions are made, you tend to have some confidence. So, for example, for Qualcomm, we actually feel like we have a seat at the table on both sides of the trade dispute or debate or
whatever
war,
we're calling,
whatever
it,
we're calling it. And the reason why we feel that is we know that the technology we work on is going to be important to the Chinese, going to be important to the United States, going to be important to Europe. And so there's a little there's a confidence or that ultimately it'll work out as a result of that.
I was going to say self-assuredness, but you're confident that the things you're making are going to be needed.
Yeah, I mean that's why a company that I would say on a consumer basis no one's ever heard of,
yeah,
in many respects, as a seat at the table in both sides of the debate. It's because the technology that we work on has been and will continue to be, and even more so probably, will become is very important to the industrial policy of almost every country. I mean, if you look today, what's disrupting business? What's disrupting business is big data because everything's being connected. Well, it tends to be connected wirelessly. And Qualcomm is the company that is working on making sure that that's possible at scale anywhere in the world. So we tend to feel like we have a good position.
The consumers that know about this company will know it for having been in the headlines in the past couple of months-ish. I want to tick through a couple of them. First of all, the Broadcom deal, the attempted acquisition, and then the president saying, we are not doing this. How did that go down?
Well, I think it all started with, oddly enough, it started because we had a dispute with Apple over the price of royalty payments.
Mm-hmm. And an ongoing dispute, we should say, right?
Correct, an ongoing dispute. And that tends to happen from time to time with our business model, essentially is to license technologies to companies, and there's oftentimes disputes over the price of that. And that dispute opened up an opportunity, I think, for there to be an attempted takeover. And ultimately what happened, at least in our view, is that, it's very difficult to do a hostile takeover. It's very difficult to do it if it's done without it being done in a friendly way, obviously. And then ultimately the technologies that we work on tend to be very, very relevant, so much so that the president intervened because, I think, of that relevancy. I mean, you can read the order. And so I look back and I say, wow, that if you ever wanted to know the value of what you work on, there's a pretty good proof.
You've been at meetings with the president. You've had conversations with him about technology and what it is that you do. Do you think he gets it?
I think it's very clear that lawmakers understand, including the president of the United States, president of China, and people in Europe and companies, they understand the importance of being a leader in technology, and in particular, in technologies that connect things. And I think that is, that just intersects with what we do as a company.
So as you say that, I'm cognizant of the current comings and goings with the Chinese on trade policy, and specifically their plan now to be dominant in many areas of the global economy, one of which is technology. You mentioned President Xi. Are you worried about the Chinese and technology?
I would say we're always aware of the competitive dynamic worldwide, obviously. But I would say we have been able to build a business that works in China, it works in the United States, it works everywhere because we innovate faster than the rest of the industry, and that tends to protect us long term. Now, what we see moving forward is very an attractive roadmap to continue to do that. If you look at 5G, for example, which we're a leader in, that technology is now not just important to the cellular industry, it's important to almost every industry. And so we think the roadmap to allow us to continue to innovate and continue to maintain a stable business, because remember, we're one of the few companies that has a business in China, has a business in the United States, and knows how to do it. And it's profitable everywhere. So we feel like the roadmap sets up well to continue to do that for a long time. And, once we get through the trade discussions, I'm sure it'll be an even better situation for us.
Yeah, but back to the actual question. The Chinese can throw the weight of the country's economy behind whatever they want to. And they now have technology in their sights.
But, you know, if you look, we've competed with the who's who of technology in the world that have, you know, unlimited resources effectively. And I would also remind you that the Chinese, if you look at what does a Chinese company want to do next? In a large part, they want to figure out how do you become an international company?
Mm-hmm.
How do you grow outside of the domestic marketplace? And that tends to be a good trend for a lot of companies like ours that have technology that is relevant. And it's really a situation when an Oppo or a Vivo or a Xiaomi, all very, very strong handset companies in China, their next phase of growth is in India, in Europe, ultimately in the United States. And, there's that really provides a stabilizing force in terms of the rules of the road for doing business worldwide. And we benefit from that like other companies do.
We're talking a lot about China because obviously it's in the news. Do we worry too much about China, do you think? What are we not paying attention to because we're paying so much attention to the Chinese?
Well, it's like any other thing. I think it's quite diverse. So, for example,
your threat matrix, as it were, right?
Yeah, but if you looked at what we worry about in China, it's very different from what a lot of other people would worry about or voice or even what people tend to say is behind, let's say, the trade discussions.
Yes.
It's very varied. You know, for a company like ours, which has a stable, profitable business in China, we have a different set of requirements when we talk about what could be improved in the relationship than aluminum or you know, another type of company that doesn't have market access. We have market access. We have good IP protection there. We have discussions about the price. But otherwise, we have a very good and a solid business there. But of course, there's always things to be worked out.
5G. There will be people listening to this program who've heard 5G and are still going to be like, so what? So what?
Well, I would say it's coming to them very soon. They'll be able.
What's it going to do for me?
In the near term, it's going to allow you to get more video, more places, and at better cost prices, at cost points. So if you look, the first wave, what are the carriers working on? They're working on, you know, this. There's just an insatiable demand for people to get video sent to them. Mm-hmm. And the capacity required in order to do that is going to go up by a step function with 5G. This is the early phases of 5G. It will also enable a company like Verizon to compete with a cable company or to provide it's going to be very disruptive, and I think disruptive in a positive way, just disruptive the way that technology executives talk about disruption, to the business models that allow new services to come to consumers. First, I think in the area of video. But ultimately, you're going to see a lot of things like self-driving cars, just a tremendous amount of IoT and secure services.
Internet of Things.
Yeah, Internet of Things. But when people talk about the Internet of Things, it almost doesn't mean anything because it's so wide.
Mm-hmm.
But what, you know, if you look at it from a company, a Qualcomm point of view, we know that if we create the technologies that allow big industries, right, to be connected securely, there will be new business models that exist. And if that happens, it'll be good for consumers.
If you build it, they will come.
Well, it's a little bit of that. But I would tell you the track record of creating technologies that open up new business opportunities is pretty high.
It's worth a mention here that you're only the third CEO of this company. It's only been around since 1985, right? The first non-family member to run this company from the founding family. I wonder what the folks who started this company 33 years ago would say about where y'all are now.
Well, I would hope that they would be surprised as to how relevant we are. I think when we started out, and I've been there 24 years, I have my foot on both sides of that question, probably. I think we'd be proud of how relevant we are, meaning that people care about the technologies, industries care about the technology, and increasingly governments care about the technologies we work on. That's first and foremost. I think also our ability to partner, meaning the number of companies that we have relationships with, that what we're working on is so important to their, I think people would be very proud of. I think the company is just like any big company that's been around as long as we have, we would be surprised at how the ambition has met the results.
What's your biggest nightmare then?
Biggest nightmare for us is, oddly enough, is really, can we scale fast enough to take advantage of the opportunity that will come our way because of the this technology opportunity that we have? And this is, I'll remind you, this is actually my third G transition that I have participated in personally, 3G, 4G, and now 5G. And this is the one that the industry is moving fastest toward, and the number of new industries that are moving toward it is higher than I've ever seen before. So, for example, 3G and 4G, what you got was in 3G, it was only the cellular carriers who really talked to you about it.
Right.
In 4G, you had the cellular carriers, but you also had the cloud providers. You had people like Google and a number of Baidu and companies saying, hey, how do I get a social platform or a search platform extended to people so they have a computer in their pocket? What does that mean to my business? For 5G, you've got all of that, more of all of that, but now you have a GE or a General Motors, or you have a number of companies saying, hey, I'm going to connect everything I have on the planet to the internet. Help me do that. That's if you ever wanted to work on something relevant, that's a great example.
Yeah. So 5G is here, or will be here really soon, right? What's the Thursday afternoon planning meeting subject that you guys have every week now? What are you looking at now?
It's interesting. We won't be done. 5G won't be the last G.
So we're
working on that. We're also working on what are the technologies that are required to take advantage of it. So if I looked at 4G, Qualcomm spent a lot of time. Okay, I've got this ability to connect everything in your pocket. I better figure out a way how to get all the computing elements to take advantage of that. So we worked on low power computing. By far, we ship more processors, graphics chips than anybody else in the industry just because of the scale of mobile. Now if we look and we say if everything is going to be connected and everything is going to be smart, what kind of technologies do we need to be able to put at low power in every device at the edge of the internet? And what will happen, what we're working on now is AI at the edge of the internet. So when people talk about artificial intelligence today, or they talk about machine learning, they're really in many respects referring to something that occurs in the data center. Back, where all the data is aggregated.
Yeah.
But in the future, what's going to happen is we're going to have these computing elements in your pocket that decide what data is important to share elsewhere. And so then it becomes, well, what technologies are required, but also what security and authentication and privacy mechanisms are required in order to allow that to be really something that people will take advantage of.
Okay, so as you wrap up those Thursday planning meetings and you go sit and you write your CEO summary for the board or however it works, are you then saying, are you the guy saying, well, you the guy writ large, right? People in your position. I think we need to concentrate on this part of AI, or I think we need to concentrate on making chips for these kinds of self-driving cars. I mean, are you framing that?
That's generally what we do. Yeah.
What's great is the engineer's answer to that. He shrugged and he went, yeah, kind of.
Yeah, that's what we do. I mean, if you look, there are really just a handful of companies that are working on the key technologies that will intersect with some business that is yet to be invented. And that's what we try to do. Now, it may sound like that's a difficult thing to do, but in reality, we're not betting on an individual winner. We're betting on a technology trend. Mm-hmm. And our ability, our track record to get those things right is actually pretty high.
Obviously, one of the things you have to do is prioritize corporate resources, right? And I'm sure you have really smart engineers and product people coming to you and saying, I got this amazing thing. What are the ones that are being left behind, and how do you make those decisions?
Yeah, it's interesting. The part of the job of the CEO, or actually the key job of the CEO, is to make sure that you don't miss the big ones.
Yeah.
And so I tend to be focused on what are the key ones that you have to get right. And 5G being a great example type of things.
That was almost easy though, right? 5G? How is 5G a hard one?
Well, I would tell you, if you look, a lot of people at the time that we made the big call, and we're making these bets years before you know about us making them.
Right, of course.
And they cost hundreds of millions of dollars to make them. And so, tremendous amount of R&D investment required to do things at this scale. So they take some nerve to figure out how to get them right. But what you don't spend a lot of time doing is now the key though is you have to allow a little bit of room for innovation because there are a lot of smart people in your company and they'll be able to figure it out pretty quickly. And so you have to let a little bit of that happen. Now what we're doing as a company is we see so much opportunity along the vectors that I mentioned that we're focusing very much in that way.
Does any of that give you pause, the strength and the power and the possibilities of the technology we're building today?
First of all, it's exciting to work on. Engineers.
Oh, I bet.
Obviously.
But there's a little, is there a little PC that goes,
There's a responsibility to make sure that the technologies that you create have the proper and the word's not safeguards, but they have the proper technology built in that so that it's used appropriately. And you know, a great example of that in the current times that we're in is that we spent a lot of time over the last decade making sure that the software that runs on your phone is secure, meaning that it's very difficult to hack. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of and we know what's in there. And the reason we did that is we said, look, we want to make sure people trust their phone. Because the device is it's a different level of it is a truly personal computer. Now in the future, if you said, "Hey, I want to actually have healthcare delivered remotely through a cellular network," which will happen, remote monitoring at a minimum. You know, you can even envision a remote controlled medical equipment. What type of network, what type of technologies do we have to put in there so that it is ultra reliable, so that it is something that people can trust, so that you could do something that had a, you know, a life-changing aspect to it? And so we build that into the technology as best we can to make sure that those hooks are there. And that's actually one of the key design vectors, I would say, of 5G is what do we need to do so that this technology is so robust that you can use it for things that it, you know, are just incredibly important.
I say this not in a pejorative way at all. It's only a matter of time before we have chips in our brains, right?
Or
the equivalent.
Well, I think the ability to augment the senses, the five mm-hmm. senses that you have today, mm-hmm. is coming. I mean, you're already seeing that with augmented reality and virtual mm-hmm. reality, which we are a big component player for. But the ability to extend that is probably, you know, pretty high. The funny part about that, or the interesting part about that, is that the technology aspect of that is probably the easiest part. When you work on things that are probably in front of public policy, then the question is, how do we make sure public policy is ready for these technologies? And when we think of our business role or what we have to do in terms of creating the ecosystems that can take advantage of this innovation, that's part of what we work on as well. Meaning that we try to encourage lawmakers, we educate lawmakers, we make sure that they know these are the type of things that people will be able to do with the technology. So get ready for it.
Do you think lawmakers understand?
They do. You know, it's
did you see them with Zuckerberg and the Facebook questions? Come on, man.
Well, I would say this. When you talk to lawmakers about the ramifications of the technologies, like a company like we make, they pretty instantly get it. The difficulty is how do you get, you know, a huge group of people mobilized and moving forward? The understanding that there's something that needs to be done happens very quickly, and also understanding that we better be strong as a nation in XYZ technology. And any nation that you go to and you talk to them about, they want to make sure that their country is on the early phases of this. And then the question is, how do you do the legislation? And that's not a technical problem, unfortunately.
So how are we doing in our technology policy?
I think we're doing pretty well in the sense that if you look at where and the evidence of that is, you know, where are the key technology companies continuing to work and find opportunities to do innovation? And as much as people talk about it, the environment is incredibly ripe to continue to innovate. Now, I answer that from the perspective of a company that is building fundamental technologies that are being used really by other companies. We don't have all of the data privacy and sort of the some of the issues that are in the news today. So we avoid that just by where we are in the ecosystem. But from our perspective, I mean, the number of new technologies and the relevancy of the things you're working on has never been higher.
Steve Mollenkopf, CEO of Qualcomm. Steve, thanks for coming into the studio. I appreciate it.
Kai, I appreciate it. Thank you.
So that was Steve Mollenkopf, the CEO of Qualcomm. We would love to hear from you. If you like this episode of this podcast, please do consider leaving us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, because it kind of does help us figure out what to bring you next. The Corner Office Podcast is produced by Bridget Bonder. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the Executive Director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the Senior Vice President and General Manager. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Another episode coming up in just a couple of weeks.